Okay, great. Well, welcome back. Two-time guest now, Jessie, my girlfriend. We've been together for 2.5 years, and we both were do a lot of talking about off-road, kind of camping, overlanding, and we thought that this would be a really good conversation to just talk about. Now, I don't usually talk about these things on Universe Game, but I wanted to start talking about more different topics. And so I thought this would be a good one to just share because I know a lot of people are interested in it. And yeah.
Yeah, it's a special interest of yours. And I don't think people even know that about you, how much study you've put into learning about off-roading, not just everything that goes into it, but the different types of vehicles, the different types of motorhomes, vans.
So we're talking about camping, not off-roading as in like, just like taking your Jeep off-roading. No, we're talking about camping and living kind of off-grid.
Yeah.
Or traveling around full-time in a van or, you know, whatever it might be. That's what this episode's going to be. All the different types.
All the different options.
Because, yeah, well, I've been friggin' learning for many years. And I've been following the industry. And, you know, in the past, we've talked about we did a rooftop tent for a year. So we've been out there off-grid, not just in campsites. No, we had a Mazda. We'll put a picture so people can see. We had a Mazda with a rooftop tent, a dog, me and you, for people that didn't catch the episodes before on that. So we've been in very close quarters with, a you know, different types of generators, solar, gas, and we know what it takes to live off-grid.
Yeah, and yeah, just to clarify, we did use a gas generator. I think it's my understanding that the term off-grid is reserved for situations where you completely generate your own power via solar.
We did have a solar, though.
Yes, yeah, so we can talk about that. We can talk about how
we switched.
Yes.
Yeah.
It didn't completely work for us, but also technology is evolving and Nick keeps up on all this stuff. I try to a little bit as well, but like, no joke, we can be driving around and Nick will see a camper or a van or a motorhome or a trailer, and he will most likely know exactly what type it is, what the layout is, just by looking from the outside. Like, It's pretty impressive. And this is a topic that I feel like is unifying a lot of different types of people, like people who are after more of the, they want to do this for the sovereignty aspect of it, the freedom to have the experience of it. And then also the people who are very practical planner types.
Minimalist.
I feel like this appeals to a lot of different people right now, because truly, I feel so empowered after having the experience that we had in the rooftop tent. We learned a lot. We wouldn't do it nearly the same as the way that we did it before. But I feel confident knowing that if anything were to happen in the current system that we have now, and if I were to be unable to live in an actual, you know, brick and mortar house or apartment, feel confident in my ability to survive, and not just survive, but live pretty comfortably out of a vehicle. And I think if people have this knowledge, you know, it instills like a level of confidence that, okay, no matter what happens, I'm going to be okay. Like, I'm going to figure it out.
Yes, 100%. So let's dive into just specific nuances, because there's so many, you know, because we could talk about the survival aspect of it, but I think we should just maybe even go back to what you mentioned before, which is the gas versus solar. Why during the winter we went with gas generator. And that was a big reason as to why. First of all, the solar, it broke in the wind. So we had it set up.
Yeah, it didn't hold up against the wind, the type that we had.
Yeah, so we had the brand, I think, was EcoFlow. And we set it up. They kind of have kickstands, for those of you that have seen those. So the solar panel kind of sits like this, and then you turn it to face the sun. And then one day it was really windy, and then I went, boom, against the car, and it just broke. And so at that point, we were already struggling because it was winter in a tent. Anybody who's done winter tent camping knows that it can be rough. Luckily, we were further south, so it was still below freezing some nights, but it wasn't like every single night, but it really wasn't working super well just to have really heavy sleeping bags, You know? So then we tried the propane heater for a while without the gas generator, but we got kind of nervous that you know, you could off yourself in the night because of the poisoning with the gas. It's
not that great to inhale propane all night either.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, so for the health reasons, we got kind of sketched out about that. And it worked, and we kept a side of the tent open, but it was still not the greatest. And so then what we ended up doing was getting a gas generator, a smaller one, that you could, like, it had a handle on the top. It wasn't one that you had to pull. And so we had that, and we would set it up, and then we would run a, towards the end for a while, we were running a space heater off of the gas generator. And that was much easier to, just in general, to have enough off-grid that you didn't have to worry about conserving as much, which was much nicer for running. Because at that point, I didn't have a MacBook, and to anyone who's going off-grid, I think it's important to look at how much your laptop uses, how much power your laptop uses. Because I had an old gaming laptop that I used, and I'm hearing noises outside. We're going to film it outside. Now I'm glad we didn't. But in the gaming laptop, used like 200 watts, and that was constant, and it was way too much. And with a MacBook, it uses significantly less. So those things become really important. And so if I was going to go back and do it, I would have a much more power efficient laptop for off-grid, because I think that was one of the biggest problems, especially with the solar too, is that we had the solar panel that the EcoFlow had a really, honestly, I'm just going to say, we've tested it, a crappy system where you would plug it into the cigarette lighter, but it took too much juice and it would blow the socket on our cigarette lighter. And then, not socket, it would blow the fuse, right? And so then we couldn't even use the cigarette lighter to charge the EcoFlow because it was supposed to charge faster. And so it was just a mess. And so that's why at that point it was better for us to have gas. But that's just one aspect to think about, is power, because a lot of people will probably see these van life people doing just solar. But you got to realize that they have a generator, but their generator is their car.
Well, I would also imagine that they probably, if you're investing in a van, then you probably have the funds to invest in better quality solar panels and technology than what we had.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because Absolutely. We had the, was it a $300 package, the portable solar panel that hooked into the EcoFlow?
I think the battery, the whole package was like $500.
Okay. We were running off a very limited budget at that time, so that's another thing to consider.
It wasn't like we had every choice. You know, we had the smallest EcoFlow battery, the River, I think it was called. And so we didn't even have the extra battery set up. So there was not a lot that we could even put in there.
But I mean, again, I think this should be empowering to hear what we were able to do with such a limited budget at time. And like, I think one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation in the first place is because van life is very popular.
Mm-hmm.
Nick and I talk about this all the time. Van life is super popular, but you don't need a van to start living nomadically. You can work up to having a van. If this is something that you really want to make your lifestyle, which is, if it's not for you, that's also totally fine. But if this is something you want to work up to as your lifestyle, you can start with something like a truck and a rooftop tent.
Or a car and a rooftop. I've seen people out there in Subarus. You know, we've seen Outbacks with rooftop tent.
I mean, we did it in our Mazda CX-5. We got a custom roof rack and put one of the bigger rooftop tents on top of that. And
that's right.
And we made that work, you know. And so you don't need a van. If you want to start living nomadically, if you want to start living more out in nature, more closely to resembling that off-grid lifestyle, you can work your way up to it without having to splurge for the $100,000 plus.
Yeah, I'll just come out and say it. Unless you're buying like a older used van, vans are absolutely not worth the amount of money that they cost. Unless you're like really rich, like, because here's the thing that I am very aware of. Van life looks cool, which is why people invest in vans, because it's trendy.
Yes.
Because functionality wise, you'd be much better off in a Class C motorhome.
Yes, we talk about this all the time. Like, a Class C is pretty much like, it's on the same, what do you call it, chassis as a van.
Mm-hmm.
my understanding of the difference is a van is just, it's more difficult to build because you literally just take the van and then you build inside of it, versus a motorhome is just a chassis and then they build the motorhome part separate, or they build the home part separate. They just put it on the chassis. But it gives you so much more flexibility in what you can build within that home space. And you have things like slides, and you have
talking about taller ceilings.
Yeah, you have the taller ceilings. You have usually a lot more room and a lot more storage. And they're not that much more difficult to drive.
They're much cheaper.
And they're much,
much cheaper.
It's absolutely crazy to me. It's like a third of the price.
You look at some easily. Of these. I mean, I'm not going to call out a specific brand because, you know, we might get sponsored someday by some of these brands, because I have a feeling that travel is going to be a big part of what I do. But, you know, you look at some of these new off the lot built vans, and they're 100,000 plus. And, you know, that's okay. There's a market for that. But if you're like us and you're just like, shit, I'm on a budget. I just want to get started. And what's the most efficient? I think Class C, as you've discussed, you know, for me, from my perspective, Class C is more efficient because I'm a big dude. This is something to also think about. I'm 6'3", 6'4" on a good day. And getting into a van and having no room to do anything
and
is
you would
not
pretty
an
much
option.
Need a custom. You would need a custom van.
A real tall van. I might do it at some point, like a really tall. We saw them. We just went to Sedona yesterday, so they exist. But again, they're really expensive, and you could probably get a good Class C. I've seen really good, like efficient Class Cs for like $25,000. You know, you could get like a used one that's a really good condition. And I'm just one who's about functionality and practicality as well. You know, it's social value. Here's the thing: you're trading social value for comfort when you're thinking about a van versus a Class C motorhome. Because social value,
just overall usefulness and practicality.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing with a van, there's the whole argument that, oh, well, you can stealth camp in a van because people don't know that you live in it. So there's that practical aspect of it, is you could like stay in more places, but I'm not really trying to stay in sketchy places or on the side of neighborhoods anyways. So that's not really a thing for me. And you know, these are just things that I'm always thinking about. So it's really dependent on, like, if you're van lifing, you're probably going to have more people interested in your travel because it's different than everybody has. There's a lot of people that have a Class C. You know, it's very functional. It's cheap. It's just the decision that most people have made. That's why vans, I think, for content creators could make sense. If you're, you know, there's a guy on YouTube. He's got long hair. He looks like me. I can't remember his name, but he lives out of a van. I'll put his name on the screen if I remember, or I'll add it in. But he lives out of a van, and you know, it's interesting because he redid the inside. It looks super cool, and you know, it's minimal. You have all these adventures. So there are aspects to it that are nice, but I don't think it's necessarily needed at all at the beginning, you know.
If you're a single person, especially, and you are a do-it-yourself type person and you enjoy learning about how all this stuff works, fixer-up kind of stuff, then a van might work well for you. You know, if you're partnered and you have a dog or multiple dogs, or if you have kids, I mean, there are people who do it, but it is much...
You have to really like each other to a whole nother level. Not just like each other, but like be able to function and do everything with someone else present. And
yeah, there is no separation.
Right. And so, especially if you're doing it like we did, and we were over like true overlanding, which is out of a tent. Right. And so when you're doing that, that's a whole nother level of like camaraderie that we had that people don't realize, you know. That you don't have walls as well. That's a big thing when you're considering, you know, am I going to get a rooftop tent versus a van a van Class C, even a Class B or A, because there are other options we haven't talked about. Class B is like kind of like a van, but but it's kind of a motorhome. That's the traditional. You would kind of say that most vans would fit into the Class B, but you know, it just depends on what you're looking for and really understanding what your needs are going to be, what your needs are in general, and understanding yourself is very important before you just go in and just, you know, spend $50,000 to $100,000.
So why don't you give people the really basic overview, the difference between a Class A, a Class B, a Class C?
Sure.
And then like a camper would be probably.
Right. Because, you know, we're considering going back out at some point and doing it in a camper, or talking about camper in a combination with a tent. You know, so there's different things we'll get into later about our specific situation. But so, you know, there basically, when you're thinking about going out and living on the road in some form, whether it's for a month or full time, you're just going to do it for the foreseeable future. Some things to think about are the different types. So you've got your Class A, which is going to be basically the easiest way to think about it is that it's a bus. You know, it's a bus, and it's a bus designed to take
those you. Have like the flat, I think, like they have the flat literal, front.
Literal like a bus. Yeah. It's a bus literally. Chassis that's designed to be a motorhome. And here's my recommendation. Just start this out. I would not get anything, just my own real, I'm sorry, I just can't. I can't buy anything without a slide. I will not buy for myself any motorhome or camper without a slide.
It just almost doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense unless you have specific nuanced situations where like you want a toy hauler, but they don't come with slides. And there's specific reasons as to why.
Or an Airstream or something. Or really yeah,
Airstreams
fancy.
As well. Mm-hmm. That's a good example. Yeah. So there's that Class A's, then there's Class B's, which are kind of the in-between, right? It's not really a Class C. The Class C, to me, is the typical, you have the overhang on the front. You know, you've probably seen them driving down the road. They don't look like a van. They're like an in-between between a bus and, you know, so that is what a Class B is. It's like your typical van life people, but, you know, there's all different types of Class B's. But you can just basically consider them van-looking. Mm-hmm. But not the overhang. Now, and they're a little bit smaller, usually.
Okay.
And then Class C is going to be your motorhomes, which are like the ones with the overhang, and they're bigger than vans. They're basically big, like huge vans.
And the front of them looks like a truck. So that's usually how I differentiate.
Yes.
It's like the front of a Class A looks like a bus, and the front of a Class C looks like a truck, because it's literally on the chassis of a truck. And you can look, and like some of them are Ford and some of them are Chevy, and you can give
Mercedes Benz Class
B's. You can
B's.
Give me other examples, but yeah, it's like it looks like a truck that has a hat, you know, and then
I never heard that before. That's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and so those are going to also feel more like driving a truck, so maybe perhaps less intimidating than a Class A. But Class A's are going to be more for your people who have more money to spend, people who maybe have families, people who need the extra space, people who are maybe not looking to move as frequently, right? Because they're a little bit, they're a lot more expensive, the gas and everything, and driving them's a little bit more cumbersome. You're a lot more limited in where you can go.
Well, a lot of those are debatable, I think, but I think you're correct on most of that, because you know I can see the devil's advocate on some of those points. Like, it's cumbersome to drive. A lot of people think Class A's are much easier to drive because you got the freaking captain's chair. You're way up there. You got the huge steering wheel. You're freaking, you know. Versus a truck is much less
comfortable. About like getting them up a mountain or something. Like going to those remote places,
yes.
It's going to be more difficult.
So comfortability of the comfort of how you're sitting is probably more comfortable in a Class A, but Class C usually is way more functional in terms of the places you can get to. But I think it really also depends on length, because that's a whole nother conversation. How long of one are you getting? What I see is that usually campers are the most popular. Campers are, you, from my understanding, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I've seen statistics on this. I can't quote it. Real quick, I just wanted to interrupt this episode on purpose just to throw you off and let you know that today's podcast is made possible by our Patreon. So if you wanted to ask me any specific questions, we go live every month in there for a Q&A where you can ask me anything you'd like. So if you want to have access to that, an exclusive Discord community, it's called Universe the Game on Patreon, because we go through different levels of the game for a month. We switch each topic after a month. So this month, for example, we have the physical level of the game. So we're covering all the different nuances of it in three live workshops once a week. So a lot going on in Patreon. If that sounds like something you're interested in, check out the link in the description. Campers are the most popular, and that's usually because people have trucks already.
Yes.
Okay. And so if you already have a truck, why would you get something with another motor to pull? Because you're not going to pull your truck. And so usually if you're a class A, you're somebody who doesn't have a truck already, and you're somebody that wants to drive around a vehicle that is not a truck, and you want to have like a economy car, you'll basically, here's the difference. You're planting with a class A or motorhomes in general. You're planting your motorhome, and then you're going to drive your towable if you have one,
right?
But that never worked for us with the Mazda, because you can't tow the Mazda on a dolly, which is a huge thing as well. You got to think about if you're going to get a motorhome.
Certain cars you can tow and you can't.
Right. So if you're going to get a motorhome that is drivable, like class A or C, you need to understand that like Mazdas, you have to put on a trailer. So then you have to haul a trailer, and trying to get a motorhome and a trailer like in a spot is a nightmare. And then what are you going to do with the trailer? You know what I'm saying? So if you're ever going to camp in campsites, that's not a good idea, because you're not going to be able to fit. And so that's something to always take into consideration. Now, dolly is not necessarily as bad. So if you can dolly your car and have a motorhome, that's something to think about investing in. It just depends on what you want to do as well. But, you know, to move on to campers are obviously your towable. So your towable homes. Basically, you've got your motorhomes. Well, your home has a motor, and you've got your camper, which is like your droppable. You're towing your home. Now, from what we've seen, our preference, at least I'm going to speak for myself, and then you can tell me what you think. I think that it's much more functional to drop your home off and then to have a truck. And I prefer to have a truck in general versus having a car, because of sketchy situations, off-roading. You can get your trailer out much further in a truck than you can in a motorhome. For the most part, you're going to have off-road motorhomes, like your class B's sometimes, and vans are going to have like off-road tires, like very high tier. So that's not necessarily always the case. But me, I feel more comfortable and safe driving a truck around as well, because there are stupid drivers. And I think I just like having the safety aspect of a truck versus like driving a car around and then driving a motorhome.
For sure. Well, several things with that from my perspective. I always feel safer in a truck. I worked in a hospital, and I have seen the repercussions of car accidents. And it actually does make a big difference when you're in an accident, what type of vehicle you're in. I know that sounds silly and doesn't seem like it's that big of a difference, but it really, really does make a big of a difference in survival rates, in injuries, all that sort of thing. I mean, heck, just a couple years ago, my parents and my sister were in a car accident, and they came out of it just completely unscathed, pretty much. The bumper was messed up. They're basically rear-ended with another car. They were stopped. Another car was going full speed and rammed right into them. The other car was totaled. The truck, like, the bumper was a little messed up. And all three of them were completely unscathed, totally fine. The other car, from my understanding, the driver passengers, they all had to go to the hospital. And the cops were telling my parents that if they had taken their smaller SUV rather than their truck for this road trip, that is possible. Like, my sister would have had to be airbagged to the hospital, because she would have been in really bad shape. Because they were in the truck, she was not a single problem, not a single injury. So that does make a difference, and I do feel safer driving in the truck. And for me, you know, health is everything. It's number one. So that is a big priority for me. The other thing too is the point that when you have a motorhome and you tow a car, you have two engines that you gotta you got to keep up with the maintenance of. And some people, that may be a benefit because they're like, well,
if I break down.
Yeah, it's like if one breaks down, you've got another one that's movable, you know, or, you know, it's like you're putting less miles, you're kind of splitting the mileage between the two of them. So that's a perspective. But for me, I much rather just like to focus on, okay, I have one vehicle and I keep up with the maintenance of that vehicle and I'm okay. And in the event that the truck would break down, at least I have my home still that can just be parked somewhere.
Yeah,
right?
I don't
like the idea of like if my motor home breaks down and it needs to go in for repairs, I suddenly don't have my home.
And that's a huge deal with Class A's because here's the thing is like your typical mechanic usually isn't going to work on Class A buses, you know, the bus chassis, but they will Class C's. So that's another thing that I've been told about Class C's in general is that if you're going to be traveling across the country, you're much more likely to find mechanics that are close to you. So you're going to have a huge repair bill trying to tow your Class A maybe hundreds of miles. And I don't really think that it's practical or true to say that, like, well, if one breaks down, I can at least go somewhere. Here's the thing. Tow trucks will tow your RV. And so, yeah, it might get like, ah, man, my truck broke down and now what am I going to do? It might be a little expensive, but you can get your... There's RV parks all over the country. We've seen them. We've traveled the country back and forth many times. And so you can get it towed to an RV park or to somewhere where you can just sit down and it can sit and it's fine. And I think that...
Yeah, but then you got to get it worked on at some point. And then whilst it's getting worked on, you don't have your home. That's what I'm saying. Like when your motorhome's in the shop, you don't have it.
You can't drive around.
I mean, you can't be inside your house while somebody else is working on it.
If you have a motorhome, yes. And right. I'm talking about a camper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry if I didn't make that clear. I'm saying with a camper, you can get it towed somewhere. So you're not stranded in the middle of nowhere. Tow trucks will tow you.
And so, I've seen that. So you're agreeing with me then? Yes. That's like a benefit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then what if... So maybe that's a case for vans then as well. So you were saying that not every mechanic is going to work on a Class A. What about a van or a Class C? Is that the same or are those easier to find mechanics who can work on those?
Usually easier to find than Class A's as well. The problem you run into is really depends on your front end. If you have a Ford front end, a lot of them are built like on a Ford Transit body, I believe is what it's called.
Okay.
And those are just normal van. Like they're pretty workable. But if you have a Mercedes-Benz front end, I know it's the typical nuance is very specific, but it might be a little bit harder to find a mechanic that's going to work on that. But I don't,
The parts are more expensive, like a BMW, right? Like
sure.
The parts are more expensive. And
of course.
It's what my dad's running into right now. He's got like a BMW SUV that he drives. And he's like, every time I take this in, it's like three times more expensive because of the cost of the parts and everything. Harder to fix.
That's right.
I mean, so these are all things to look into, especially when like you're looking at things that are used and you think you might be getting a good deal on something, like doing the research on all these little components. Like there's so much that goes into it. It's like, okay, what happens in the event that it breaks down or, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we didn't even talk about yet, too. So to get back to campers, there are some two big categories. There's fifth wheels and travel trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fifth wheels basically are just going to mean that you have a part of the camper is actually going to go in the back of your truck. And if you haven't seen one before, just type in fifth wheel on Google or whatever your search engine is. You can see that basically the easiest way to think about it is that the bedroom usually sits over the truck versus a travel trailer. Nothing is over the truck. Now, usually we find that fifth wheels are safer to tow because they usually have less sway. They usually have less problems because you're more connected. Think about it. You're closer to the truck. You're closer to the mid center point of the truck versus like sitting on the back. So you're going to be more in tune. It's going to be easier to turn and drive in general. That's what I've had people tell me. I've never drove a fifth wheel. I've drove a travel trailer, but like I said, that's what I've had some friends tell me. And that's what I've seen a lot of people say online as well about that. Now, I don't think that's a big deal until you're getting to very long lengths. If you're below 30 feet, I don't think it's going to make a super big difference. And I think what's actually going to make more of a difference is the type of truck you're driving and how heavy your truck is. Because if you have a light truck and you're pulling something long and heavy, you might see some swaying and some problems like that. So there's a lot of people that are online right now. I'm watching videos and they're saying, this is half ton towable. And it's like 7,000, 8,000 pounds. And it's like, but that's empty. And so if you start getting into the 8, 9, even for if sure. it is half ton towable, you just got to be very careful. And I don't know if I would ever tow a half ton in that very high range. I would always do a 3/4, even if it's a little bit older.
You also don't want to push a truck to its edge if you're going to be doing this full time, you know, because a lot of trucks will say they can tow, you know, half ton or however much. And that's more for recreational use, you know, recreational, occasional use, not for like every day, every week, every month. You know, this is your lifestyle. You're towing something. So that's also something to keep in mind.
Yeah. So it's always something to think about. And so, you know, your next thing you're going to want to think about is, if you're considering, we'll talk about, well, let's just stick on the topic of motorhomes and campers, and then we'll get to overlanding and tents later.
Yeah, because I definitely want to get to like how to encourage people in this situation that maybe they have a situation similar to the situation we were in, and they either need to live out of a vehicle kind of out of necessity, and or they just want to get started on their nomadic kind of back to nature lifestyle, but they don't have a huge budget. We can talk about like how to get started.
Okay, so let's get into that in a bit. That way we'll have everything bookmarked, so people want to skip ahead to that, they can, but that way it'll be bulked up and it's not going back and forth. So I think the last couple things that I want to talk about with the campers and the motorhomes is length and also how many rooms. So you've got to think about practicality for what's good for you and your family. If you have a family or if it's just you, again, a slide is going to give you, I like to do like functional training. I like to use bands. I like to get on the ground.
Yeah. And, like, are you going to work out inside of this thing? That's something to consider. Probably need some room.
And with a slide, you're not going to be able to do that. Without a slide.
Yes. Yeah. And like, that's just something to keep in mind, because I think, you know, for us, we thought we were kind of naive and we're like, well, we'll just camp where the good weather is. And that's not always reliable. You know, weather can change very fast, or like you can know like rather generally that the weather is going to be nice at this time of year and you're going to spend a lot of time outside. But it can have, you know, randomly a week of rain or a really intense wind, or really hard to predict all of the factors. So having a place, like if that's really important to you to be able to work out, we like to do myofascial release, so you need to be able to lay down on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You need space like for a full, you know, full length yoga mat or other type of mat where you can lie down and you can do that. So that's another thing to think about.
Yeah, and I think a perfect example of this is literally where we are right now. We're filming this in Phoenix. And if you look at the forecast for Phoenix, it's like 71 for a high today. And then like 2 days later, it's going to be 88. And then the day after that, it's going to be 71.
Oh, it's like so weird. And then there's like one day next week that's going to be 100. Like it's literally going to get to triple digits. But then the next day, it's going to be like 575, low 55. Just weird.
Right. And then the problem becomes when you have that, if you start weather chasing, the problem is that it's going to take a lot of gas to get out of those places. And, get to other places. But also, if you don't have walls, you don't have AC, that's another part too. But we'll talk about that in just a moment. Let's finish up on the motorhomes. So the quick thing that I want to talk about is that unless you have a newer motorhome or camper, you are probably not going to be able to sleep while the other person is up. Because we figured that out when we were
footsteps.
Yeah, we figured that out when we were in Texas and we stayed at a friend's camper. We stayed in, it was probably like a 27 footer, and it had two rooms, basically a main room with bunk beds in the main room, and then kind of like a separate room, but it really wasn't even a separate room because it was like shades, like not a true door. So whenever anyone was walking, you could feel this. Like, you could feel the vibration of them even walking. And those doors are not meant to be quiet. Like, I would try to go outside, just like walk down a little path, and I would definitely wake you up just trying to shut the door, even if it was like really slow. So that's another thing to think about, is that if you're going to do a camper or something like that, getting on the same schedule is going to be important. Especially if you have a dog and the dog starts moving around, it's going to wake you up as well. That's another thing too. And that's why I suggest that if you're going to get a motorhome or camper, they actually make these custom, basically sway stoppers. I don't know what the name is, but there are solutions. Oh, cool. I don't know if you know that, but there's solutions to that. If you have an old one, basically they make the thing more sturdy. They make the entire camper so that it moves less. So there are solutions. I don't know how well they work. You'd have to do some research. But on the newer campers, they usually have some of that to stop as well. But another thing to think about is if you're doing a campground and you have like perfect leveling, that is going to make a difference on how much it sways, or if it's on cement, if it's not on cement. So there's a lot of different things that come up when you're out there. But I think the final point about that is that we've discussed that if we're going to stay in one together at some point, if we do decide to do that, that it would have to be actually a three room. And so that would be kind of long. But what that would look like would be basically you have your private bedroom, then you have your main room, which is usually a U-shaped dinette, a dinette, and some sort of like recliner or couch sofa. Those are basically your options. You have two of those. Then you have another room, which is like a bunkhouse room. Now you can actually convert these bunkhouse rooms into like just office things like that, or you can just leave one bunk in there, which is what we might do for you, is leave one bunk in there because you're short. Yeah. You're able to fit in a bunk, you know, I'm not able to, and so you would like have your own room, and so having your own space would be better, and it would be long term probably more sustainable for sure. But also you're sacrificing the ability to get into state parks, to get into national parks, because one thing we didn't talk about today is that when you go to a lot of campgrounds, it's just something you might think about, you might have not thought about, is that if you have something bigger, they're going to have probably less spots for bigger things. So the shorter you are, the more likely you're going to be able to find places to camp if you're wanting to stay in campgrounds. But if you're like us and you're like, I kind of want to be off in the dispersed camping locations, I don't really want to be by people, I want to be more in nature, then that might not be a consideration. But it still is a consideration to me, like, okay, I don't want to go too long, because then if I ever need to camp, or I want to camp at like a KOA overnight or something like that, or if I want to go to a national park, I still have that option in some respect. So if you're like, I just want to go to all the national parks and see all the trees, and I want to go to Yosemite and, you know, out here, there, thinking about length is also important. So where are you willing to sacrifice? Because sometimes you're going to have to sacrifice something. So if you're getting some longer, it's going to be harder to find places, but you're going to be more comfortable. It's going to be harder to drive, but it's going to be, again, more comfortable. And so those are some things to think about. You know? So, but yeah, I think we nailed the motorhomes and campers. Yeah.
Yeah.
For the most part, you know, there are other things to think about very simply, are like, you can get solar, you can get gas. I'm not convinced solar is the best solution. I think it's good to have solar. I'm not going to rely on solar. I don't fall for that whole, I think there's a whole misdirect with society thinking that solar is the answer. That's not where my perspective is. I think that really gas right now is the functional way to go. And I think that it's not going to hurt anything like a lot of people think. I don't agree with a lot of those perspectives. So I think getting a gas generator with also having solar is a good idea, because being able to passively generate electricity is good. So solar is helpful, but I just wouldn't rely on it.
Well, there's the other argument, though, that whether or not you believe that gas is actually as bad as people make it out to be, at any given time, there could be a gas shortage. There could be a pipeline burst. There could be.
Sure.
There could be all these external factors, but the sun is never going to stop shining. You know, you're going to have the sun no matter what now.
Right.
The solar panels could break for some other reason, but if you have high quality ones, those could last you several decades, you know, hopefully without any real breakdown. Now, there is maintenance to them. You obviously, sure. You have to make sure that they're cleaned so that they're, you know, the maximum amount of surface area is converting the solar. But yeah, I mean, just things to think about. I think it's good to have both.
That's
if,
what I'm
saying. If you have the ability to have both.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have the ability to have the like high quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think that it also depends on what you're going to be doing. You know, what are you going to need power for? Thinking about AC, you know, if you're going to be in Phoenix in the summer, you aren't going to be able to run solar. You're not going to be able to run AC off solar. It's just not possible because it takes too much energy. So that's what I'm talking about, is having it, the gas for those situations where, shit, I'm in 110 degrees. I need to be able to run my AC in here. And so it's always good to have, or if you're like, it's been cloudy and rainy for the last week. I need to throw on the generator. You know, just these type situations. Yeah. So, but moving on to tents and things like this, we were in the Smittybilt Gen 2 XL overlanding tent. And it's still, I actually looked the other day, it's still one of the most highly rated tents out there. We don't have it anymore, but even in 2023, it still stands up. And so I would highly recommend that tent to anyone who is looking for an off-roading thing and you want a big tent that's big enough for multiple people. That Gen 2 XL Smittybilt is the brand name. That is the tent that you want to go with. It was a great tent. We actually cut the part off that goes over the ladder. I don't know if I would cut it again. We just kind of wanted to sit on the end and be able to like watch the stars and that kind of thing. But that's not necessary. So, yeah, with tents, you can really do a lot, and it's your best budget option, obviously.
Because you can also, like, let's say you're planning on doing this, you know, you can buy different components that you will need for overlanding, you know, over a period of time, rather than, you know, with a motorhome. Or a van or something like that, you're basically making one big investment where everything that you need is coming as like a package deal. Versus with overlanding, you can save up over time. Like you can, you know, you're probably going to need like a camping stove. You can buy a camping stove. You're going to need probably a Domatic fridge. You can buy the fridge.
Domatic.
You can buy the what?
Domatic. Sorry.
That's what I said.
Okay. Sorry. Keep going. But you're right. Yeah, you are going to need one of those. You don't know. You can start with the cooler. But you can do a Domatic.
Yeah. You can just gradually start accumulating all of the different pieces that you need. And then the other part of this is because it's so much more budget friendly, you know, you can even plan to, when you're camping and if there is bad weather that rolls around, you can just plan to stay in a hotel in the area for a couple of days. You know, mm-hmm. like it's more flexible in that regard. But assuming that most people who are going to be doing this are also probably doing some sort of online work, you know, you're probably going to need something to power a computer, to power different electronics so that you can do your, basically you can do your job. You know,
yeah.
Looking into the generator, looking into different forms of having a battery generator, having a gas power generator, things like that. Those are going to be the big things to have.
You can still charge it off of your battery of your car, technically.
Yeah.
You just you'd have to run the engine of your car. And we did that before, too.
Yeah. And then as far as like hygiene and showering and things like that, there are portable showers that you can buy. But there's also options like you can get a $10 a month Planet Fitness membership and you can shower at Planet Fitness.
We did that. Mm-hmm.
Or you can like KOAs do a thing, I believe, where it's like you can use your showers for a day for $10 or something like that. So there's other options where you can like have a hot shower when you need a hot shower. You know, I think that's the biggest thing about overlanding is like people think it's primitive because you don't have showers or bathrooms. But honestly, just get used to doing your business outside. It's not as difficult as you might think that it is. Like that was something that I thought was going to be really hard. But we actually bought like a portable toilet and that was really gross to deal with. So we actually ditched that very quickly. And
within like the first month,
because it was like, because then you also have to lug it around and like, yeah, it's so much easier just to have a shovel. You just go out,
dig a hole.
You can also buy a privacy tent. So you can like put that around you if you're in kind of a more open area. And dig your hole and do your business. Really not.
That's the most natural way to
really do it. Really not that bad. And it honestly, like, it kind of feels freeing in a way that's like, oh, I'm not reliant on.
Have you really lived until you shit in a hole?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I, of course, you're watching out for like rivers and that can, for contamination. But yeah, I agree with you. It's really. You're thinking about financially, okay, if I buy a motorhome, that's my hotel money. That's my Airbnb money. Like, if you're on a budget, then you're like, okay, I'm spending all that money up front to have this so I don't have to do that. But if you don't spend that money up front and you get a tent and you overland, you have that extra money that you didn't spend because it's going to be much cheaper than buying something. To then be like, all right, I can get this Airbnb for the night. I can get this hotel.
Yeah, you can
for the
just
night.
Think of that as like your rent money, because probably when you're tenting, you're probably going to be on, I don't know why I'm having a brain fart right now. What is it called when you're just camping on land and you don't have to pay for
dispersed?
It?
Dispersed?
Yeah, you're probably going to be dispersed camping most of the time. So most of your, what you would have budgeted out for rent would just go to the maybe 4 days a month that you really need to be in a hotel or an Airbnb. And that's usually still going to work out to be cheaper than whatever it was you were paying rent for before you even started.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it is cheaper, but you know, you're having your different issues, you know, that you've got to be aware of, which is weather. You know, you have to be much more weather aware. You also need to be much more safety aware.
Because you also need to be much more organized in general.
Yes.
Because in an RV, there's going to be more room for you to organize where everything is. Like everything's going to have a place and it's pretty much going to stay in that place. Versus when you're overlanding, you're going to get to a spot, you're going to get set up. Everything's going to kind of like come out of its shell into like its specific spot you have. And then you're going to have to pack all that back up when you leave. Now, if you have a good system for this, I mean, you can get this down to where it only takes you, you know, 20 minutes to pack up, but you have to be really efficient and be someone who's very minimalist and organized minded, you know, and then this is the other thing with doing this kind of lifestyle is, you know, if you had a truck and a camper, you could just leave the camper in its spot and you could drive away and you could go do your errands. When you're overlanding, when you need to leave, you need to pack everything up. And this gets really annoying after a while. But again, this is, we're kind of talking about this more from the perspective of this is like what you're going to do in order to probably save up to eventually get a motorhome.
If you want.
If you want, you know.
You don't have to. But it really just depends on how much you enjoy overlanding.
Right. And it like also depends on how. Yeah.
I mean, there's.
But you can go, like, the thing about overlanding is if you have a truck or a Jeep or something, like, you can get way the heck out there. And that's, I think, the benefit, a benefit that we haven't even talked about yet versus, like, when you're towing something, you're still going to be limited no matter how good of tires you have on your truck or how small your camper is. You're still going to be limited versus if you're overlanding and you have a really nice off-roading vehicle, like you can get way the heck out there. And people have Starlink these days. I mean, there's...
Oh, I would definitely. Yeah. If I ever go out again, I'm getting Starlink 100%.
Or, you know, some people, they're in this to just get away from everything. And they don't even want the Wi-Fi, which is, if you're in a position to where you can do that, that's well,
it's for
great.
Work. It's for work, really.
Right. Like that's it. Why I'm saying if you're in the position to where you can do that and you don't have to work for, you know, extended periods of time, that's great. You know, and then you can really, really get out there. And I feel like that's when overlanding is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if you have a hard shell tent. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are people who.
That is a big thing, though, right there.
What's that?
Hard shell camper. There's really not very many hard shell. It depends what you mean by hard shell. Because there's some concepts coming out that there's literally everything is it's a hard shell camper. Also, we didn't even talk about pop-up campers. Mm-hmm. And we also didn't talk about truck bed
campers. Yeah, truck campers. I know. There's a lot of different options.
Truck campers are a good option.
Those are cool.
If you already have a truck and you're small, like you're a smaller person, truck campers are honestly a pretty good thing to consider. I mean, you could also just get a tent and put it on the back of the truck.
Oh yeah, there's a girl I follow. It's like Happy Camper Girl or something like that. Mm-hmm. Could be butchering her handle, but she's got a truck camper. Just a really sweet setup because it's like one of those pop tops.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And
that was just, you know, we never considered that because we never had a truck.
Right.
You know, and so if you're honestly, if you're in the in-between phase, think about that. If you're in the in-between phase where you're like, I have enough money to get a vehicle, not enough money to get a vehicle and a camper. Maybe getting a vehicle and a truck camper. A truck and a truck camper.
Trucks are just going to give you the most options.
Yeah.
Quite honestly.
So we're talking about, if you don't know what we're talking about the... You can look this up too. Just type in truck bed camper. I think it's going to be something like that. Maybe I'm screwing this name up. I don't really think about these super often, but basically they're built to fit in the bed of your truck.
Yes, now, you're not towing anything. It's just like sitting on top.
Correct. Now yes. You can get out really far as well with this. Yes. This is basically overlanding too. Like true overlanding. I guess I would consider true overlanding. Overlanding in my, maybe people are going to think I'm elitist, but overlanding. I guess hardcore would be a better way to describe it is when you're like, you're not on a trail. You're actually going out
right.
and making your own trail or you're on an off-road trail right. itself versus you're on a camping trail. Like you can get way out there. There's no people. There might be bears or, you know, things like way out there. That's another thing to consider is safety. In a, when you're in a soft shell, you are much more at the elements, including the elements of animals.
Yeah, but I always felt so much safer, even though we had a soft tent, I felt so much safer being elevated, you know, being off the ground.
Absolutely. When I went
like,
back
like that
out.
That is a big deal. I think people don't think about because they're like, why even invest getting the rooftop tent? Why can't I just invest in like a really nice ground tent? Well, you can do that, but that's, to me, that's even way more primitive than being in a rooftop tent.
I felt so much safer. And I actually can confirm this because I went out and then I ground camped in Santa Fe without the rooftop, after the rooftop tent. And I felt much more in the elements. I felt much more like...
That's because of like thundering. You were in a KOA too, so that's different.
But no, that's not just the reason. It's just you're on the ground. I feel like... That wasn't the only time we tent camped, by the way. We didn't just end this KOA. We were also tent camping after we didn't have the rooftop in north of Sedona at that place. I can't remember.
Right,
what the
but
name
you were talking about Santa Fe specifically.
Well, in general, I would say I felt a big difference being on the ground, and I felt much less safe being on the ground than up in the air. And so that's something to consider. I am a little paranoid sometimes when it comes to outdoors and sensitivity in areas. Luckily, we rooftop tented for about a year and we did stay in areas where there were wild bears. We stayed in Colorado and dispersed camped that outside of campgrounds and there were bear sightings in the area. And I know that for a fact. And so that was west of Colorado Springs. If you take that highway west, I don't remember the name of it. There's some really good camping out there. And so we have stayed in there. We stayed in Sedona and other areas in the Southwest. There's coyotes. We've heard coyotes throughout the night and other animals. So we, even though people are like, oh, that sounds super scary, we never had a single issue. Never had a single issue. Never had an animal approach us.
Texas, where there are gators, you know, it's like if we were in a, you know, in a ground tent.
Gators, yeah. That is sketchy.
I mean, they don't come out of the water super often, but every once in a while.
Yeah, you know, there are those things to consider. And so being up high, I think, is definitely an advantage. And so, yeah, with tenting, you know, we have the pop-up camper as well, which is it's a towable, but it's light, and it basically is a camper that pops out. That's another option besides your rooftop tent. Yeah. That is going to be more family-friendly. Gonna have more room, you can move around in there. It just depends on if you have some vehicle that can tow it already. I mean, if you have a vehicle that can tow already, you can consider a pop-up. We didn't, though. You know, our Mazda CX-5 was not tow capable of barely anything, and so we never wanted to even try and push it because it's not meant for that. And we most things are going to weigh more. I think it was like a 3,000 pound tow capacity on the Mazda. And so we consider there's also teardrop trailers as well, which are basically trailers that you can sleep in, and there's basically enough room for you to lay down in, and it's a hard shell. But then usually there's like a back hatch that opens up, and then you have your sink, and you have it's a little bit more primitive, you could say, because you're probably going to have like a bucket, not a bucket, but like you go to Walmart and you have the blue jugs, what do you call those? Basically like reservoirs. You put it like a reservoir of water, like a big box or a big tub.
Yeah, and then you just press the
button. And then you push the button down. So it's not going to be like, oh, water's flowing and through this. And you've got the sink that drains in this way. It's like, it is, you can still have those, but it's not going to be as. And I think that is also a decent option for someone that is like, I really don't feel like getting in a rooftop and putting something on top of my car. But maybe you have an SUV. Maybe you have a Jeep Cherokee or something that you can tow like 4,000 or 5,000 pounds. And you're just like, well, I like being outdoors. I don't really need area to sit inside. And maybe you're on a budget. Considering like a teardrop trailer would also be a decent option for you. But it just depends.
Yeah, so there's so many options.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that leaves you feeling empowered to where, yeah, like you have options in the event that you want or need to do this full time to live.
Yeah, it's definitely doable.
Because it's crazy. I mean, we're seeing people leaving, I guess, a traditional lifestyle in droves right now to think about cost of living, just going through the roof, and more and more people are working for themselves, which makes it harder to rent things or find things. So, you know, there's a lot of options out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess it just comes down to, at the end of the day, kind of figuring out what your main priorities are. Because at the end of the day, truly, that's what it's about. Do you want walls? Are you wanting to be more protected from weather? If so, maybe you want to consider something that has AC in any form. You can even, sometimes you can get the teardrops with AC, but most of the time you can't because they're not usually meant for that. And you'd have to have a generator and all that. And so they usually just have a fan. Like a lot of vans sometimes will have fans too. Sometimes they'll have AC, depending on how high tier you are. But thinking about, okay, do I need AC? Do I need heat? What time of year is it? How long am I going to be doing this for? Do I need it for four seasons? Can I travel across the country to the warmer weather or to the weather that's in the mid-range, you know, the 60s or so? Or am I going to be in the cold? Am I going to need to heat? If I'm going to need to heat, how am I going to do the heating? And thinking about these things. I think that the one thing I would try to stay away from, unless you want to run a gas generator and a and a space heater or stay at campgrounds with electricity, because mm-hmm. if you stay at a campground, they're going to have electricity you can just plug into if you get a site that has it. And if you do that, you can just run your space heater off of that and you don't have to worry about it. And so if you're staying at campgrounds, you could do winter camping a lot easier because you can plug in. And so that's mm-hmm. something to think about, is how often do you want to plug in? How often do you not want to plug in?
For sure. I think this was a really good overview. If, you know, for all those watching, let us know in the comments if you have any other specific questions. Maybe we can do a round two, or maybe Nick has a response to doing follow-up videos, because like truly he does have a lot of knowledge on this stuff, and we've also trialed and errored a lot of different things. And mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you feel about that?
Feels good. I think we'll just finish up with, I kind of want to share what we're thinking about doing. So we have done the rooftop tent. We've actually done ground tenting as well. There are some people that actually live in their cars too. We didn't talk about that.
Some people who've made suite setups literally in their car.
Where you sleep in your car.
In their car.
Yeah.
You know, for just extreme minimalist situations.
Mm-hmm.
Doable.
It's doable. That's right. So yeah, for us, we are looking at just a possibility of how much do we want to travel, yada yada, potentially getting out. I think getting something, this is what I would recommend, is what I'm gonna do, is trying to stay under 30 feet if you can. You know, if you have the budget, doing you know, it depends on who your partner is. You know, it depends on how capable your partner is. You know, do they want to drive too?
Or just how independent you are as a couple, because not mm-hmm. all couples are, not all couples are like us. Like Nick and I are pretty independent. A lot of other couples, they want to do everything together. Which
yeah.
is, if that's you, great. You can probably buy the shorter motorhome and be
couple
fine.
Couple campers under 30 feet. That's what I would do if you're a couple.
You'd be fine, but... Mm-hmm. Nick and I we're very independent. We have separate businesses. We have separate interests. We have friends and family who live in very different areas. And so we like having the option to have the freedom to go a separate way if we want to do that too.
Yeah. So we are thinking about potentially getting separate rigs, having two trucks and two campers, yep. or doing a truck in a rooftop tent and a truck and a camper, at least one
or
of
like
us.
Starting with one camper and a rooftop tent and then working our way up to getting a second camper. I mean, there's just
I don't think there's a right way to do it. It's just trying out different things. And so yeah, we'll probably get at least one camper and a truck to start, and then we might do two, depends. We have a lot of different ideas, and I think a lot of my content is going to be based on, a lot of people love my videos where I'm traveling around. I'm actually at the places talking about the history of the place or the sacredness or whatever it might be. And so with that type of content, I love doing it. And being able to travel around in a camper is very nice. And that's something I've been working towards for a long time, is doing something like that. So I'm excited for that time. And yeah, I think that does it for today. Happy with it?
Yeah, I think we covered, I think that was a really good intro to these topics for sure. And hopefully, you know, people found a lot of value from it. There's just so much information. So like I said, if you have any specific questions, just let us know in the comments.
All right. If you enjoyed this episode of Universe the Game, go ahead and consider hitting the friggin' subscribe button. It really helps the channel. If you could maybe hit like, if you liked the video, like the damn video. That is extremely helpful as well. Otherwise, check out the things that keep this podcast going. If you want to see more episodes, like my book, 10 Secrets of Awakening, which is in the description, or check out the Patreon, where you can ask any questions in the live Q&As. We've got live workshops each week. Check it out also in the description. We'll see you in the next episode. And until then, peace.